76-2470, John Gillen et al. Versus the City of Neenah et al. Representing the plaintiff appellant, Gillen, is William O'Connor. Mr. O'Connor.
Thank you, Your Honor. Members of the court, the individual plaintiffs in this case, Mr. and Mrs. Gillen, Mr. Dunwoody, have been long-term civic leaders in the Fox River Valley. Mr. Gillen was the vice president and national sales manager for Kimberly-Clark Corporation for some 30 years. He and his wife have owned and occupied riparian property on Little Lake Butamore for more than 20 years. Mr. Dunwoody was a member of the Neenah City Parks Commission for over 30 years and served as its chairman for 10. He taught civics in the Neenah Public School System for 35 years and is the founder of the Friends of the Neenah Parks. These citizens and organizations have worked tirelessly for decades to encourage the city of Neenah to develop the ball fields and other park amenities made possible by a 1951 legislative lakebed grant that created the opportunity to develop Arrowhead Park. As recently as May of 1996, Mr. Dunwoody was rebuffed in his written request to the city of Neenah to use the boat launch, which is about the only planned improvement that's ever actually been constructed on Arrowhead Park. In response to his request to the city, he received correspondence from the mayor of Neenah, Mayor Carpenter, who replied to his request, and I'm quoting, "The boat launch is on leased land, and for safety and liability reasons, P.H. Glatfelter is not allowing use of the launch." The plaintiffs asked this court to return this case to the trial court for its deliberative adjudication. There are two issues I want to address right away. The first is the suggestion that a ruling supporting these plaintiffs' access to the courts will result in a whole new basis for direct citizen suits against parties that they feel have been inadequately represented by DNR. I've brought along an exhibit, which is over on this side of the courtroom, and you have copies at your desks, which to focus the court's attention on a critical fact in this case. The exhibit includes a quotation from the so-called settlement agreement that was entered into between the respondents and the Department of Natural Resources, which the respondents say bars the plaintiff's case. It states the Department of Natural Resources' opinion that the use of this property for this purpose is a violation of the public trust laws, the Constitution, Chapter 30, the Lakebed Grant, and so on. I agree with the defendants that a plaintiff may not directly sue a person whose proposed use of public trust property is determined by the state, by DNR, to be consistent with the public trust laws. That's why we have the Administrative Review Act. This isn't that case.
But then you're saying that if this isn't that case, why didn't your clients involve themselves in the 227 or the administrative proceeding, which was a lengthy one, before getting into this particular process? Why?
Justice Wilcox, those proceedings that led to the issuance of a single DNR permit, and that permit has to do with air pollution. We did not believe that the jurisdiction of the department to consider the standards that they needed to apply as a condition of issuing an air pollution control permit was germane to the question of whether the city of Neenah, which is the owner of this property, subject to the lakebed grant, owned a clear title that would permit this activity. That's not what the DNR natural resources professionals who are struggling with the chemistry and atmospheric interaction issues that are involved in an air pollution control permit.
Yeah, but what about the DNR and water? I mean, this is a big water case. Isn't that what Chapter 30 is about?
Your Honor, this is a big water case. The Department of Natural Resources did make a determination about the water issue, about the public trust and lakebed issue, and that determination is reflected on my exhibit. The department determined that this use of that property would, according to the expertise of that agency, would violate the public trust doctrine. Notwithstanding that determination, the department, for whatever reason, decided that it would not prosecute, indeed entered into a written agreement with the defendants where they waived their right and explicitly agreed that they would not use their authority to enforce the law.
Okay,
that's
a
prosecutorial discretion decision.
Right.
And I believe that was beyond review by these plaintiffs.
In other words, you agree that the DNR, under its various powers relating to water, could have put a stop to this lease.
There's no question about that in my mind.
But that your position, if I understand it, is they did not put a stop to the lease, even though they thought the lease violated the law, because they decided within their prosecutorial discretion not to do that.
And who knows why? Agencies have limited resources. They may have not had the horses that would have been necessary to run up against the very substantial economic resources of the applicants. They may have decided that earlier actions of the department or its predecessor agency, the Public Service Commission, in effect legally would have stopped them from acting. Whatever their reasons were, it's our opinion that those reasons lie in the range of the executive branch's authority to make discretionary decisions about prosecution that is generally, normally, beyond review by the court. Certainly it should be beyond the review of private plaintiffs. If you would have a concern about the possibility of opening the floodgates to citizen litigation, then what you should do is not accept the defendant's arguments, because if these plaintiffs could have sued DNR for their disagreement with the department's prosecutorial decision, then every citizen will have the opportunity to sue any agency when they fail to make an enforcement decision that the plaintiffs desire or citizens desire them to make.
Mr. O'Connor, why didn't your clients ask for a stay in this case after they lost at the trial level?
Justice Crooks, I'm sure you've seen, if you have not carefully reviewed, the supplemental affidavits and the other materials that the defendants have introduced into the court long after Judge Hawley's decision in Winnebago County, which all goes to the point that they've built a $45 million building on this site. I knew perfectly well that if the plaintiffs had sought a stay, that they would have been faced with the requirement by a circuit court judge to post bond against an injunction.
Is that required
as
by
a
statute?
Practical matter, it would have been out of the question.
Is that required by statute, post bond?
I believe it is required by statute.
Counsel, you stated that you were asking us to hold only, that we shouldn't be worried about the opening up the barn door effect on this. But is that really what you're asking for? Because, I mean, I can envision a situation, if that's what we hold, then the DNR would never make a finding as to whether some project was or was not in conformity with, therefore avoiding our holding. Or a DNR that might make a wrong decision and say that something was in conformity that really was not. Aren't you really just asking us to decide this case on its facts? I.e., when faced with a Department of Natural Resources finding that something is in violation of the trust, public trust doctrine, that a citizen can get involved at the level you are requesting.
Yes, is in violation. But this is a very rare occurrence. I think it may be another 150 years before the Department of Natural Resources again, in writing, legally binds itself to a document in which it simultaneously expresses its opinion that a use is a violation of our Constitution and laws, and binds itself not to take actions to enforce the law.
Since the request initially when the suit was filed was for an injunction and the plant has been built, where is the suit headed? Should this matter be remanded back to the trial court? What is it, the relief that's being sought then?
At the time that the case was originally filed, we sought to enjoin the construction of the building. The defendants decided to pull ahead. They wanted to take I would say it's the bully strategy, Your Honor, which is build now, ask questions later. They were certainly on notice that there were serious issues about the lawfulness of constructing this building. The DNR secretary...
The question is, though, what's the relief you're seeking?
I don't think that we need to reach that here today. These plaintiffs...
Well, it
I
goes to the mootness question, doesn't it? I mean, it goes to the sense that... I mean, you argue that that it's not moot because they chose to build it, but if the only request is for an injunction not to build it, it is moot. It's only if there's some other relief sought that it's not moot.
If a structure is constructed on a lake bed in Wisconsin, under Chapter 30, that is considered a public nuisance. And there are specific provisions that authorize the state to issue orders to require its removal. If there is a different remedy that will serve the public rights of the people under the Constitution and result in substantial justice in this case, there may be a remedy that the trial court or this court on subsequent review can fashion. I don't know what it is.
Well, you agree that the injunction's moot.
I agree that the injunction against the construction is moot. I persist in my view that the construction itself constitutes a violation of the lake bed grant and of the constitutional protection of the public interest.
Well, if we hold, as you ask, that the citizen can get involved, I guess I'm looking for an answer to Justice Geske's question. You know, what do you do? If that's the only holding that you get out of this court, that, yeah, you were right to be in court in the first place.
Then you send me back to the trial court, mm-hmm. and we have a trier of fact who can adjudicate the matter and determine whether this, as DNR opined, is a violation of the public trust laws, and then an appropriate remedy can be fashioned by the circuit court.
Well,
whether that
back.
Requires the removal of the building to a different location,
Are you going to amend your complaint?
I would seek to amend my complaint at that time. At the time that we filed the lawsuit, we did not contemplate that the defendants would take the approach of building notwithstanding the appeal of this claim.
Counsel,
a second concern that the defendants...
Counsel, the issue before us, as certified by the Court of Appeals, is whether the public trust doctrine enables a citizen to directly sue a private party, etc. It concerns me that maybe before we can answer the certified question, that there's a threshold question to determine. That is, whether or not this is a lake bed grant subject to the public trust doctrine.
Your Honor, the legislation that provided for this referred to it as a lake bed grant. The deed referred to it as lake bed. And if there is a question about whether it's a lake bed, I think that would be an excellent question for the trial court to struggle with, because that is exactly the kind of fact-finding that these plaintiffs did not have an opportunity.
The point of my question is this, that if this is not a lake bed grant, then the issue before us is... almost advisory. Don't we have to know whether or not this property is subject to the public trust doctrine?
I don't believe you do, Your Honor.
You say on page 11 of your reply brief, Roman numeral number 5, that the material facts must be resolved and this court should remand the case for further proceedings to make that determination. That is, defendants challenge the status of the subject property as lake bed. Are you still saying that, or are you saying something different?
Your Honor, the only claim of title that the city of Neenah has to this property is a deed that it obtained from the Board of Commissioners of Public Lands pursuant to the legislative grant. So whether it's lake bed or not, the only title they have is from the legislature authorizing a deed which states that the property is to be used for public purposes.
So there's no issue as to whether or not it is lake bed property subject to public trust doctrine from your point of view.
No, I disagree with that characterization. I think there is, and I believe it is lake bed, and I believe that a trial court finder of fact would conclude that it is a lake bed area. But what I'm saying, Your Honor, is that even if the trial court were to determine that it was not a lake bed, it could not escape the conclusion that the title that the city got, it got by a deed from the legislature, and that deed was granted by the legislature for a specific purpose and restricted to that purpose by the language of in the deed, which says that it is a grant of such and such a meets and bounds description of real property for a public purpose.
And that would allow the trial court then to also look at whether or not the present use is a public purpose. That's been argued that it's being used for a public purpose at this time, although it's a private facility, but the purpose for which it's used, apparently using waste sludge and using that to create a product.
They argue that that
so,
is...
So that would be another issue that the trial court would look at.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Let me ask you, I'm going to return to an earlier argument you were made about this language. Is there something that required the DNR in writing this agreement with the defendants to put in its opinion vis-a-vis the lakebed grant and whether or not it violated public... I mean, your argument is that the language is in there, you ought to be able to sue, but were they required by some theory to put it in there, or it's just...
I'm not aware of any legal requirement that such language be put in, and I also want to remind the court that this is no settlement agreement of any kind of a pending court case or administrative review
case. Just a promise, not the promise.
This is a result of a lot of discussions that were held by people in a room in the Secretary of Net.
But you are hanging your hat on the fact that since they did say it, that gives the right to a private citizen to file the lawsuit.
I believe that the right of a citizen to bring the lawsuit is supported by the fact that there is a clear question which has been recognized by the agency that the court looks to and that the agencies look to that has expertise in the area.
Mr. O'Connor, aren't you asking, though, that we extend the public trust doctrine when you're asking that it be allowed to be applicable to private parties? Obviously, the city of Neenah is not a private party, but the other two defendants are. Is that not an extension of the public trust doctrine?
I don't believe it is, Your Honor, because the actions that are being taken by the defendants involve the construction on land that is owned by the people of this state, held in trust by the state, delegated by a deed to the city of Neenah for it to use for public purposes. And I believe the consistent decisions of this court say that a citizen has the right to enforce that public trust law. The case of Cobb versus Milwaukee, for example, Your Honor, involved private citizens bringing a lawsuit against the county of Milwaukee in that case, challenging the county's ability to construct a freeway on land that the county had obtained by legislative grants for public park purposes.
That case wasn't aimed at private parties. It was aimed at Milwaukee County, just like here you've included the city of Neenah. But you've also gone on to name the two corporations, and I'm wondering on what basis do you justify doing that?
Well, the court has held in the past that Chapter 30 reflects a codification of the public trust law. And Chapter 30 clearly says that any placement of material or a structure on a lake bed is a public nuisance. And it grants a citizen a cause of action to abate that public nuisance. That is an authority that's given to a citizen to abate a public nuisance, whether the nuisance is the result of activities of a public entity or of a private party.
Let me ask you, because I've heard you say different things now. I would like you to articulate for us what the rule of law is that you're asking for when a private citizen can sue over the public trust doctrine, sue private parties. What is the rule of law?
I believe that if the public trust violation is a violation of a specific provision of Chapter 30, which many, many public trust violations would be, that the provisions of Section 30.94, I believe, a specific provision of Chapter 30 expressly authorizes any citizen of the state to bring an action to abate such a violation.
Now, that's different than what you answered me, because I put down here that you were asking for a holding that it's okay for a citizen, it's permissible for a citizen to sue when a third party when the DNR has made a finding of violation but refuses to prosecute.
Your Honor, I agree with that statement, and in addition to that...
I'm not agreeing with anything. I'm trying to find out what it is you're saying.
In addition to what you just said,
okay,
Chapter 30 expressly, by decision of our legislature, has granted citizens the right to bring lawsuits to challenge violations of Chapter 30. Regardless of what the DNR has done.
That would be a broader holding. And the statement you agreed with
would be a narrow one.
Is a narrow holding. And it sounds to me, if I understand it, that your broader statement relying on Section 30.294, as I read it, encompasses the state's position in its amicus brief.
I believe that's correct.
You have, in effect, adopted in your statement the Attorney General's brief. That's why you agree with that.
I want to say one more thing, if I may, about another concern that the defendants have raised, which has to do with their concern for finality. Particularly the defendant, P.H. Glatfelter Corporation, has made a great point of the fact that they need to know when they're at the end of the line, when they can proceed with construction without fear of a citizen lawsuit. And I want to answer that question for them. What you do is to bring a quiet title action. And if you look at the decisions of this court, you'll find a number of cases with names like Milwaukee versus State, Madison versus State. In all of those cases, what happened is that a unit of government went to the legislature, got a lake bed grant, decided to use the lake bed grant area for some purpose. And even though they had legislative approval signed by the governor, they brought a quiet title action in the circuit court to make sure that the circuit court and ultimately this court would agree with the determination of the legislature that the proposed lake bed grant was consistent with Article 9 of the Constitution. In the Milwaukee case, they did that. That case involved very broad public navigational interests. Milwaukee went to the legislature, asked the legislature to grant them lake bed that they could convey to a private entity, a steel company, in order to arrange for an international harbor in Milwaukee. The legislature agreed. The legislature found it to be a public purpose. They then, not satisfied only with that degree of assurance, went to the Milwaukee County Circuit Court, asked the circuit court judge, we want a quiet title action. We want you. And the judge issued an order that, a judgment that barred, quote, the state of Wisconsin as trustee or otherwise, and the public, and any and all unknown claimants from bringing an action to contest the city's use of the land for that purpose. The attorney general then took that circuit court judgment to this court, and in doing so, in the words of this court, the attorney general did that despite his support for that project by stating that the attorney general felt it was incumbent upon him to present the matter to this court in order that the legal questions involved may be finally adjudicated. Contrast that with these defendants. They sought DNR's views on the proposed lake bed grant and used for this purpose. DNR gave them their views. They said it's unconstitutional, it's a violation of our law. Notwithstanding that, they didn't decide to ask the legislature to reform the conveyance, which they might have done, and I would urge your attention to section 13.097 of the statutes, where the legislature itself, in an exercise of tremendous restraint, I think, has required the DNR prepare a report on the consistency of any proposed lake bed grant with the public trust standards set forth by this court. They didn't do that. They didn't go to this legislature to get approval of a change in the proposed use of this lake bed. And they didn't certainly go beyond that and bring a quiet title action. There was a simple way for the city of Neenah to figure out if this obviously marginal or unlawful use of their lake bed was consistent with the laws of the state. They could have started a quiet title action, and it could have come to this court.
Counsel, your clients didn't file a notice of claim with the city. Why shouldn't the declaratory action be able to be maintained absent that notice?
The city officials have known that Mr. Dunwoody, Mr. and Mrs. Gillen, and others have opposed this use of Arrowhead Park for a long, long time. They appeared at city public hearings that were held on this. It's part of a stipulation of facts.
Did you file a claim then? Assuming
there was
that
not
you...
a notice of claim filed. There was indeed constructive notice of the claim. And furthermore, Your Honor, it is my position that the Notice of Claim Act is not sufficient to defeat the Constitution of the state.
What authority do you have for that?
I don't believe there's a case that reports that directly, Your Honor.
Can we, in our mandate, simply agree with you that these plaintiffs have standing, period, and send it back to the court for further proceedings? Or do we have to make directions with respect to other aspects of this case?
I think you could simply remand it to the trial court, Your Honor. I think it would be more appropriate for this court to both remand it to the trial court and to review your own decisions as to what are permissible uses of public trust land. Those appear in the PSC case, the City of Madison case, where the court has gone through a litany of factors that should be considered by the legislature about what is a permissible use of public trust lands. Those are all adopted and codified in Section 13.097 and have to do with whether the property will be controlled by the government, whether the purposes of the use are supportive of public trust uses of the property, and whether the public will have general access to the property and other standards like that.
Thank you, Mr. O'Connor.
Thank you.
We'll have time for rebuttal. According to my argument schedule, there will be 7 minutes for the defendant, Glatfelter Company. Mr. Timkey, Foley, and Lardner, you have a motion, I gather, or
yes,
a statement?
May please the court. I'm here to request that the court approve Mr. Mandelbaum of the law firm of Ballard Spahr, Anders & Ingersoll in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, to make the argument for P.H. Gladfeather Company. He was admitted pro hoc vice to represent P.H. Gladfeather by the Winnebago County Circuit Court, and with the court's approval, he would make the argument.
Thank you, Mr. Timpke. Court approves. Mr. Mandelbaum, you have, according to my schedule, have 7 minutes, and Minergy Corporation is 23.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. The P.H. Gladfeather Company made a motion to dismiss in this case, and I want to point out the factual background here. The P.H. Gladfeather Company has constructed nothing here, at least not for a generation. P.H. Gladfeather is named in this case because the parcel which Minergy has now constructed a facility on was prior to the time the complaint was filed in this case, leased to Gladfeather. Gladfeather surrendered the lease to facilitate the project and is a party to this settlement agreement. The plaintiff's claims here seek to vindicate the public's, the state's, public trust interest. In seeking to vindicate that interest, the complaint attaches the settlement agreement to which Mr. O'Connor has referred, and from which you have an excerpt. The settlement agreement, on its face, to borrow DNR's characterization from the December 8, 1995 assurance letter, which is in plaintiff's appendix at page 181, it's on page 3 of that letter, which is page 180, resolves the public trust issues in connection with this project. This is a real settlement agreement. This is not an exercise of prosecutorial discretion. Plaintiffs have presented the court with an excerpt from the background recitals of that settlement agreement, which is presented here and is cited to extensively in plaintiff's brief. The introduction, which I believe is at page 100 of the appendix, makes clear that these are background statements. Paragraph 11 makes clear that each of the defendants here strongly disagreed with the propositions that DNR makes, and then the parties go on to make an agreement, to have a settlement. The settlement is not simply presenting a project to DNR, which DNR then gives its views about. That is what the assurance letter is. If you look at that document, that is like an SEC no action letter, for example. Instead, it's an agreement that's supported by consideration. Gladfeather moved about 75 trucks, which were parked on this parcel. There are significant restrictions placed on this entire landfill, not necessarily related to the Minergy project, but over all future use of this landfill associated with all parties. And DNR, on behalf of the state, agrees not to sue on any public trust-related claim for an extended period, essentially forever.
Counsel, I'm concerned with this. There is arguably a constitutional violation, public trust property being used for private purpose, arguably. There is an argument to be made that who cares what the DNR decides to do or not to do with regard to this constitutional violation. If such a violation is brought before this court as guardians of the Constitution, we have to address the issue even if the DNR says it's unconstitutional but they're not going to enforce it. Could you respond to that?
I agree with you entirely. And the question presented to the court, I believe, on this simple motion to dismiss is, what's the proper procedure for doing that? And the proper procedure for doing that, I believe, is to challenge the settlement agreement to say that if there is a question about the public trust, the DNR may not settle the case. Now, I can't believe that that's true. That is, there are many filled lands around the state of Wisconsin which would arguably be subject to public trust and arguably not. And DNR must be, the state must be able to settle those cases. But if the state decides to settle the case, these plaintiffs should have and could have challenged that decision.
And how do they do that? Tell me procedurally.
So I'll address that briefly. Mr. Apfel will elaborate. I believe that the settlement agreement itself was reviewable directly under Chapter 227. If not, then all of the issues presented in this project were reviewable in a contested case hearing either on the air approval, which was based on the environmental assessment, which included the discussion of public trust status of this property, or I think perhaps more appropriately on Chapter 227 review of the exemption to build on an existing landfill, which goes directly to the question of where is the location of this property. By having 227 review and forcing 227 review, the procedure would force all those who disagree with the administrative judgment and who disagree with the project to come forward in one place, have all the issues resolved with the benefit of the agency's expertise, if it were in a contested case, otherwise in a circuit court in one place at one time, and the matter would be resolved and ultimately presented to this court if that's what happened. What plaintiffs propose to do here is simply to ignore the settlement agreement. Nowhere in this complaint is an allegation that the settlement agreement is illegal, unauthorized, unconstitutional. There's simply a description of what it says, and it's attached. There's no challenge to that settlement agreement.
Well, but really, all that aside, isn't what they're really doing simply saying we're going to skip 227 review and go right to goal?
Except they are not prepared to...
Goal being the circuit court.
That's correct. Their 227 review might not have been a contested case, might have been in circuit court directly. In any event, DNR probably would have been an indispensable party. The decision would have been subject to a different standard of review. And we would have been addressing the propriety of the settlement as opposed to simply going directly at this project. Developers of projects cannot be placed in the position where any citizen, there's nothing magical about these citizens, anyone in this room can sue tomorrow if these plaintiffs can sue tomorrow.
But one of the problems I have is that the argument you're making is that any citizen can enter into an administrative review process and challenge the state agency or the agency's authority to exercise its prosecutorial discretion or to act, and it would seem to me that that would lead to chaos in our administrative review process.
With your permission, I'll answer your question. I think that's not accurate. That is the ordinary rules of standing. And this is not simply an exercise of prosecutorial discretion. This is a settlement agreement. The excerpt you have in front of you states the position that DNR articulated, which I will observe includes not only the statement that this particular Minergy project was an issue, but that an existing portions of the existing Gladfelter paper mill, which have been there for a generation, as well as the landfill, are problematic. And that whole class of issues was resolved for the foreseeable future in something that looks very much like a settlement agreement. And the notion that that kind of a settlement of the state's claim of the public trust would not be subject to review seems to me, one, not to open the floodgates. To say that it is subject to review, it does not open the floodgates. And second, it is perfectly appropriate. If it's an important constitutional issue, it should be reviewable, but in an orderly fashion. This is not an orderly fashion.
So you disagree with the Attorney General, who takes the position this is not reviewable?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
May it please the Court, my name is Michael Apfeld, and I represent the Minergy Corporation. I've been asked to extend Mr. Gunn's apologies for his inability to be here today, but from the city of Neenah is Mary Jane Carpenter, who is the mayor of the city of Neenah.
I would like first to turn directly to the amicus brief filed by the Attorney General and to address in particular the Attorney General's contention that these decisions, and particularly this decision, was not only impractical to review, but simply somehow beyond this court's review. Needless to say, we disagree with this position vehemently. We think that it is a disease that does not exist, which has been concocted solely to justify the cure which is proposed. Now, one need look no further than the public trust decisions of this court to see that the DNR's or the PSC's decisions on public trust issues are subject to judicial review. Let's turn to the Munch case, perhaps the case cited most frequently by the petitioners. The Munch case was, in effect, an appeal from a decision of the Public Service Commission not to get involved in a case. And this court basically said, get thee involved, and remanded it to the agency for purposes of addressing the weighing and the balancing that necessarily goes on in public trust decisions. Ashwaubenon versus PSC. This court, while recognizing that the PSC's determination was legislative in character, rejected the argument that that legislative character precluded any sort of judicial review. Amernick versus DNR. That was a Chapter 227 appeal from a DNR action taken pursuant to its 30.03 authority, precisely the authority at issue in this case. And the decisions, the reports of this court are literally filled with decisions involving appeals from the DNR's refusal to require an environmental impact statement, which decisions involve an investigation into the agency's determinations.
Mr. Appelfeld,
yes.
Why isn't the DNR a necessary party in this action?
Why isn't?
Why is it not a necessary party?
It is a necessary party.
Why didn't you bring them in?
It is not our purpose to bring them in.
Why not?
Well, we are not seeking to attack the settlement agreement.
You could have, or the plaintiffs could have. You could have brought that to the attention of the trial court and said these are necessary parties that ought to be part of the action.
Well, Your Honor is certainly correct that if they are even entitled to go forward and seek a declaratory judgment action, that the declaratory judgment statute does require them and probably precludes the trial court from actually effectively issuing a declaratory judgment regardless of what we say or what we have failed to say, because to do otherwise would undercut the authority and the action of a state agency. But we clearly told the court. As a matter of fact, Minergy's affirmative defenses may have included the absence of an indispensable party, but I am not sure that we raised that in our
motion. You're on a motion to dismiss.
Well, Glatfelter filed a motion to dismiss. We filed a motion to dismiss or for summary judgment. Yes.
And then you had a stipulation of facts.
Yes, we did have a stipulation of facts. We also submitted other affidavits containing matters outside the stipulation, which were not contested, but on the other hand, which were not relied upon by the trial court in reaching its determination.
You advance the argument that this is subject to 227 review. One of my concerns is 227 review has a 30-day time period in which to seek review, as I recall, for 227 review.
Actually, that limitation is fairly narrow. The 30-day limitation applies only if a particular form of notice was sent out pursuant to, I believe it is, 227.48 sub something. In this particular case, we are actually dealing with a variety of agency actions. And while I fully agree with counsel for Glatfelter that the settlement agreement was a real settlement agreement, and incidentally, the plaintiffs in this case had notice of the settlement agreement before it was even signed.
The point of my question is going
yes.
to this. When does, whatever the time limit is, when in this fact situation does it begin to run? Does it begin to run when the DNR decides not to enforce, which looks to me like probably sometime in November? Does it start when they decide, when they make the signing of the agreement, which is in mid-December? Does it start when they, on April 22nd, when they issue a decision approving the adequacy of the environmental assessment report, or on April 30th, when they issued the pollution control report and permit? When does the period, whatever it is, start to run in this kind of decision not to enforce whenever it was made? We don't know when that was made.
All right. Well, There is, of course, a cluster of principles, such as latches, which might impose a different set of limitations. But aside from that, the settlement agreement standing in and of itself may not have had a specific limitation. And although I think that it was appealable in and of itself, but you have to keep in mind the context in which the settlement agreement was reached.
So the answer to my question of when is the point of origin date upon which you start computing the time for appeal, when is that date in this case?
In this particular case, I believe it was upon the issuance of the air permit, of which they had notice, and which was founded upon, pretty much predicated upon the settlement agreement. The settlement agreement was not entered into in ignorance of all the other permitting processes that were going on.
So that was about April 22nd?
It was April 22nd or April 30th, I'm sorry.
And that was a permit that allowed the use of a furnace, is that right?
Yes.
And so that's what they were supposed to appeal this public trust doctrine on, a permit that allows a certain type of furnace.
It was not just a certain type of furnace. People knew where this furnace was going to be located.
Well,
if I may, let me set the entire... Yes, I'm sorry.
To follow up on Justice Bradley's comment, footnote 2 on page 6 of the state's amicus brief indicates as follows: nor could petitioners have obtained review of the agency's enforcement decision through the artifice of challenging the air permit or the accompanying environmental assessment. As for the former, that's the air permit, compliance with the public trust doctrine or Chapter 30 is not germane to issuance of an air pollution control permit, the validity of which is gauged solely by the applicant's compliance with applicable air pollution statutes and regulations. Do you disagree with that? And if so, what do you base your
disagreement? I disagree with that, but I need to set this in context. You have to understand all the administrative actions that were going on here. There was a settlement agreement. There was an environmental assessment. There was an agency decision not to require an environmental impact statement. There was an air permit, and there was a specific exemption to build on this closed landfill. That constitutes, well, actually, there was one other solid waste exemption that's not particularly pertinent, but that constitutes the universe of DNR action on this proceeding. Now, one general response is, just because the plaintiffs have a little difficulty identifying which of these decisions they have to appeal, I don't think constitutes an excuse for them to throw up their hands and say, we don't have to appeal any of them.
Yeah, but you're saying, in response to Justice Bradley, that was the one that they had to appeal from.
Well, I think that they could have appealed that one. I also think that they could have appealed the exemption to build on the solid waste closed landfill, which was entered about the same time.
On what ground?
Excuse me?
On what ground?
Well, on the ground, presumably according to the plaintiff's theory, that the action violated either the statutes or the Constitution, that the DNR was acting beyond its authority, or, under our view of the proper view of the public trust doctrine, that its decision was beyond the range of discretion delegated to it by law. Because... Yes.
These decisions, the April 30th one and the 22nd, address the issue of whether or not the air emissions meet standards.
Yes.
That is, whether or not the cyclone furnace is capable of firing natural gas, paper, mill sludge, and materials, etc. And on the 22nd of April, they talk about whether the DNR has authority to issue an air pollution control permit to limit the emissions. And they make a finding that the emissions are consistent with the standards set. Mm-hmm. That seems to me a very different... I mean, I think they agree with that. In fact, they say in their brief, they agree that the standards of emissions are met. So they don't object to that finding because the finding is correct. The standards are met. They're supposed to appeal from that finding that they agree with.
You don't have to appeal from the finding, but you can appeal from the permit itself insofar as it was issued beyond the beyond the authority. My attention is drawn at page 129 of the appendix to a finding of fact that the that the permit was consistent with social, economic, and other essential considerations. But they could have appealed the overall legality of it. I would also like to point out that the plaintiffs themselves actually participated in the environmental assessment and the air permitting procedure, and in the context of that participation, they themselves raised precisely these public trust issues. They thought back then that it was an appropriate forum. They've not alleged or shown that they were prevented from raising these considerations. Why can they not appeal on that ground? And if somehow that the DNR's determination or that the public trust issues falls through the cracks somehow, and that is not appealable under 227 proceedings per se, this court has held that the writ of certiorari is available to allow them to challenge agency actions. So one way or another, whether the settlement agreement is viewed as final on that issue or merely as preliminary to the other agency actions which is going on, they have the ability to raise the public trust issues and to appeal the public trust issues.
But you said that they had notice of the settlement before the settlement was entered into.
Yes.
Did they get were they officially parties to these settlements?
They were not officially parties.
And I don't remember the DNR rules. They're sometimes a little different from each of the agencies, but agencies, when they do final decisions, have to give notice to the various parties, and that sets up usually the judicial review. Did they get official notice from the DNR?
I do not believe they received official notice of the settlement agreement per se, although, again, it's perfectly clear that they were aware of the settlement agreement before it was signed.
They may have a laches problem.
They may have a laches problem.
They didn't get official notice. They weren't official parties. How did they participate in the settlement agreement?
Participate?
Yes.
Well, obviously, their signatures were not on the settlement agreement.
They did participate then.
Well, they participated as citizens of the state represented by the DNR.
But they didn't have their own lawyers participate.
No, they did not. As far as I know, keeping in mind, of course, that the record of the settlement agreement is not before this court because
right.
The record only gets called up by a 227 and a cert petition. But they, as far as I am aware, they did not participate, certainly did not participate in the same manner as Minergy or Glatfeld or the City of Nina participated.
So they had to rely on the DNR to protect their rights.
Yes.
So what protection do they have, or do any of the citizens of this state have, when an agency, whether it be DNR or something else, doesn't perform its duties properly?
They challenge the agency action.
Even though they're not parties to the action? Under what provision of 227? Can you give me a section?
Well, it's the general review. Any party aggrieved, 227.52. Any party aggrieved by any decision.
Maybe a party aggrieved when they're not a party.
Oh, I think it's perfectly clear that you can be a party aggrieved without being an actual participant. And I'm sorry, Your Honor, I cannot cite you to it, but I'm convinced that that is the case. You do not have to have been a participant in the proceeding to constitute a party aggrieved.
Usually a party aggrieved has a special interest.
Yes.
How do these people have a different or special interest than any other citizen of Nina or any other citizen of Wisconsin?
Well, actually, it is not necessary to be a party aggrieved to have a special interest. That actually is a requirement. I think you're thinking of the requirements for a contested case here. But that gets to the nature of the public trust doctrine itself. The public trust doctrine is a doctrine of standing. That it's precisely what makes them a party aggrieved, if aggrieved they be, in order to challenge that decision. And that State versus Dietz, among others, a decision of this court, clarifies that it is a doctrine of standing. And I think if you look at the decision, actually State versus Dietz says first, it's a doctrine of standing pursuant to which the state, or, not and, or citizens suing in the name of the state, have a right to challenge certain action.
And
I think
Dietz was runaway water. I've forgotten that.
Dietz was a sediment case.
That wasn't an administrative action case, was it?
It was brought by the state. I don't believe it was brought by the state.
It wasn't an agency action case.
I don't believe it was.
Okay.
No. But I think that if you look at the decisions, the public trust decisions have all been challenges to administrative or legislative action. And I think that, as I said before, this is a problem. This is the cure for a disease that doesn't exist, is what plaintiffs' claims are. I think that there are important policies reflected in both administrative law in general and in the public trust doctrine in particular, which compel this court to say, if you want to challenge agency action, challenge the agency action. Let's turn to the public trust doctrine itself. The public trust doctrine not only allows, but actually requires that the alleged incursion into the public's interest be weighed and balanced against the benefits from the incursion. It's also clear beyond any doubt that this weighing is a legislative process, not a judicial one in the first instance. And there's only one agency which currently exists which has both the authority and the technical expertise to conduct such an inquiry, and that's the DNR. The plaintiffs can say, we don't know why they decided the way they did. Well, the answer is challenge their action and find out.
I may or may not agree with you that one of their recourses is a 227 review, but my question is even more fundamental than that. You are saying that that is their only recourse, correct?
No. Either a 227.
Oh, yeah.
Or a petition for certiorari. In the last instance, in the very last instance, perhaps a declaratory judgment action in which the DNR is involved, although I do not particularly think that's procedurally proper. But you cannot challenge, you cannot bring public trust rights on a project, bring a public trust challenge to a project which the DNR has said should go ahead without involving the DNR.
See, counsel, I'm hearing an awful lot of very fine, good arguments made by you and your colleague that would be appropriately brought before the legislature because they make a lot of sense to me. But the legislature has passed 30.294, which says that every violation of this chapter may be prohibited by injunction and may be brought by any person. How do you get around 30.294?
30.294 gives standing only for violations of Chapter 30.
Well, this is an alleged violation of Chapter 30.
The only provision of Chapter 30, which is alleged to have been violated, is 30.12. 30.12 is, beyond any question, inapplicable to this particular situation for several different reasons. First, the DNR determined that no 30.12 provides for there's a permitting process if it applies. The DNR determined that no 30.12 permit was required in this case. I direct you to the appendix at 183, the very last sentence.
Says, yeah, they determined that, but
okay.
That does
second,
not make a whole lot of...
Okay, second, the statute itself says this does not apply where Lake Bit has been filled with expressed authorization. It says that. It's right on its face. And we have to keep in mind, we are not talking about waters which are navigable.
But correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't the plaintiffs here say in their injunction that there was a violation of Chapter 30?
Well, they said that, but if you accept the facts as alleged...
Doesn't the statute say they have a right to be heard?
Not when they go further and allege that, you know, the specific statute and the specific facts which demonstrate that they have no right to proceed.
Well, but on a motion to dismiss, don't you agree with all these facts?
Well, yes, but when the facts themselves, as stated, demonstrate that they have not stated a claim upon which relief can be granted, you do not have to.
This is, in effect, a summary judgment.
Well, it's actually a mixed. For example, there are any number of defenses which have not been adjudicated, which can't possibly be...
But in terms of, it's not just an assessment of the amended complaint or the complaint, it's an assessment of the complaint.
It's the assessment of the complaint as supplemented by a stipulated facts. That's what it is. But I don't think you have to go beyond the complaint to see that 30.12 is the only section that they are alleging, nor do I think that you have to go beyond the complaints to realize that the statute itself applies only to... it does not apply where Lake Bed has been filled with authorization, and this has been filled with authorization. And you don't need to go beyond to know that this court has held that section does not apply, or rather applies only to waters which are navigable in fact. And there's no question that this is not navigable in the past.
It is a question. At one time, it was navigable.
At one time, it arguably was.
And now it's been filled, right?
Yes.
And as I understand it, unless you can tell me if it's so held otherwise, there's a question that's presented as to whether that which was navigable, arguably, and now landfilled, still falls under the concepts of navigability. Now, I know that it sounds a little odd to talk about a navigable landfill, but odder things have happened in the law, as you very well know. And it seems to me that's an issue that might have to go back on remand and not one that we can settle. This is at a very early stage, right, Counsel?
Clearly is an early stage.
Very early stage. And so the real issue, I think, is can these guys get into court at all now? And whether they win or lose, they may lose. And your issue is you don't want them to even get started. I mean, and that's a perfectly plausible position. But isn't that where we are at the moment?
Well, first, Your Honor, with pausing a moment on Chapter 30, the DNR relied on its Chapter 30, specifically 30.03, authority to settle in entering into the settlement agreement. But passing
that... Arguing that the company was violating the law, and that, but that the DNR, as I understand the agreement, but you should correct me, the DNR had already, or somebody else, had already authorized, what, 20 years or 30 years of filling and of use of this land, not for a public trust, and that from the DNR standpoint, as all, even though this was all a mistake, contrary to law, they thought it was inequitable to enforce the law against your client. Is that a misstatement of what the settlement agreement says? Now, that wasn't your position. You disagreed with them, but that was the DNR position.
You have to understand, that's one of the things that it says. The DNR also knew what this project was and what it meant to Winnebago County.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's why they settled.
And if the DNR was wrong, then challenge the DNR. We have never said, and the trial court has never said, if I may take just one moment to summarize, Your Honor. We have never said, Glatfelter has never said, the city has never said, the trial court has never said that the plaintiffs lack standing to bring a public trust challenge. What we say is that if they want to bring a public trust challenge, they must challenge the agency which has been vested with the authority and has the technical expertise to engage and has engaged in this balancing of extremely diverse and extremely complex interests. That's all we're saying. And this independent action, in which the DNR has never been involved, which does not seek to overcome the settlement agreement in any way, should be dismissed.
Justice Babbage has a question, and I gather Justice Bradley has a question, and I do too.
Well, this is a pretty important case, so we'll keep you up here for a few minutes longer. Did you fully answer my question, which in a nutshell is, boy, the language of 30.294 looks awfully clear to me. And you, did you fully answer that?
I thought that I did, but okay. let me try. I mean, it's that you cannot examine their ability to rely on 30.294 without at least looking at which provision they claim has been violated. And that provision, A, on its face hasn't been violated, and B, still falls within the settlement agreement. I don't think that provision is intended to give to split what is in essence a unified cause of action into what's the population of the state, X million separate causes of action and right to proceed. There is one public trust challenge. The DNR took that challenge and looked at it and said this is the way it should be determined. That having been the case, they challenged the DNR, not bring their own independent action.
Justice Brown.
I'm sorry.
I want to get back to the issue of navigable waters. It seems to me that you argue that when you're arguing about DNR has authority over the public trust rights, you cite to 30.034, and you did that just moments ago in response to the chief.
which gives DNR authority over the rights relating to navigable waters. So when you want 30.034, you cite that, and that pertains only to navigable waters. Yet, in refuting the plaintiff's public nuisance claim under 30.12, you then characterize the property differently. It isn't clear to me what your position is. Is this navigable waters or isn't it?
No, it's not navigable waters. But the DNR also has authority under WSSTAT 23.11 sub 1 over all lands owned by the state or in which the state has any interest. General supervisory authority.
If it's not navigable waters, do you have any argument under 30.034?
Well, 30.034 gives what the Attorney General's office itself has referred to as comprehensive authority on the part of the DNR not only to deal with violations of Chapter 30, but violations of the public trust laws in general. That is, their authority to deal with claims goes beyond mere violations of Chapter 30. If this is a public trust claim, whether or not it's navigable, the DNR has authority to deal with it. If somehow this land is not public trust land, we win. Doesn't matter about the settlement agreement, we just win.
Counsel, you seem to say that the plaintiffs here sue you and others, but they didn't do it right. And you suggested certiorari. Can they still bring certiorari?
I think that they're barred by latches by the court-imposed six-month deadline. Your Honor, the plaintiffs here had the opportunity to replead. In fact, they repleaded once after they'd seen what our position was. They never asked for it again when their case was dismissed, just like they never asked for a stay. I would maintain that it is too late by now.
Why can't we, how you label a pleading is sort of irrelevant. Why can't we treat this as certiorari?
Well, the DNR is not involved at all. They've never named
the
DNR.
Well, then, if we've got it...